Hi, I'm Ray Poynter. This is Talking AI. And today I'm delighted to have a guest with me, Alina Hallinen. Alina is a behavioral strategy consultant and founder of Prismatic Strategy. She began her career in consumer insights almost 20 years ago, and for the past 13 years has specialized in behavioral science. Before becoming an independent consultant, she spent 8 years as co-founder of one of the first agencies dedicated to applying behavioral science in commercial research. Over the past 5 years, her work has shifted towards behavioral design, helping clients apply behavioral thinking more strategically. More recently, that journey has expanded to include the role of AI and large language models in shaping how people think, decide, and interact with information, which is why we're so delighted to have Alina with us today. So welcome, Alina.
Thank you. I am delighted to be here. I take any opportunity to talk about this stuff. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. So let's look at the segue. How has your interest in human behavior shaped your approach to investigating artificial intelligence and specifically these large language models?
Well, I think at the very foundation of it's I've talked for years about how psychology is very weird and, there's a bias in representation and all that kind of stuff. And a few years ago, I realized it was actually going to ESMAR Congress and then the ESMAR AI event. And I realized that there is a lack of representation for women in AI. And I had only really dabbled in that at that point. And I just thought that cannot be right. Like that it cannot be right that there is such a lack of representation. And at that point, I kind of didn't know, like, how do I fit into this? Like, how would I talk about this? I'm not an I'm not a machine learning engineer. And it's taken me quite a while to kind of start talking about it and I kind of find my interest area. But that's where it really started. And I really hesitated and thought, I was like, but then I thought, if not me, then who? Like, like be the change you want to see. And what angle will women bring to this? I don't know. But it can't be right that there's only, that representation isn't there. So that's kind of how I got into this. It is more like it is still human behavior, is that how do we think we might think differently because of our different backgrounds and so on. And I thought, you must have different, more voices and, if that's all it is, and that so be it. But as I got more into working with LLMs, I guess I've experimented for 1.5 years. And I think from the beginning, I approached it as a sort of a co-intelligence quite naturally. Back where, about 1.5 years ago when I think, when people were really talking about prompt engineering, I was like, I kind of talked to it as a human, as I would talk to a colleague, and I didn't say anything because I thought, I was like, well, maybe I'm just not doing this right. And lo and behold, 6 months later, a lot of people started saying, yeah, I talked to it like a human. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I wasn't so far off. And that kind of gave me confidence to start really thinking about it more. And I think for me, a lot of, not technically, but like a lot of the aspects of machine learning and generative AI, what's behind it, how it's trained, like things like operant conditioning, reinforcement learning, those are things that we have taken from psychology. They're the same things that operate, like that work for humans, for animals. That's very basic, and a lot of the outputs that they've been trained on are made by humans. So there is definitely understanding humans and human outputs and all that kind of stuff is important, but also this isn't like any other this isn't like software that we're interacting with. This is very different, and it's constantly moving, so it's evolving, and it's how we integrate it into our lives, how we interact with it is different from anything that we've had before, and that anything like that has to do with human behavior. There's mental models, there's expectations, there's decision making, metacognition, self-awareness, all these types of things that feature into how we use these tools that are available to us. So Yeah, that's kind of like that's how I got into it, really, and it's kind of just
Super. I'm just going to back up
evolved.
1 second because when you said weird, you didn't just mean strange, you meant something quite specific.
No, yes, I do. So weird, as in Western educated, industrialized. Sorry, Western educated samples from industrialized, rich democratic nations. So basically, the vast majority of psychology literature, or what we know about humans, their how we behave, how we think, how we feel, is based on weird people. So weird in capitals, and very small slice of humanity. So that's, the same thing is happening with LLMs, because the vast majority of the data that it's been trained on is also from weird countries. So that's, there are lots of elements. It feels like a representation of the human condition, let's call it that, for lack of a better word. And I feel like the same issues that we have, like understanding of the issues in psychology, or understanding of psychology, is helpful in understanding that interaction as well, and what's going on there. How exactly? That's literally the what I'm exploring.
Well, that takes me to kind of my next question. I like the fact that you talked about things like reinforcement learning. We see that in humans, we see that in animals, we see that in the machine. So, what are the sorts of things you've discovered about the way that LLMs work? And what about words we see like think, chain of thought, and we see reasoning referred to in some of the iterative models? Where do all of these come together, do you think?
Well, there's a couple of angles to that. One is that I was recently reading this paper that's about barriers to AI adoption, or AI tool adoption, and one of the things was that we kind of have this need to understand how it works. Like, we don't like black boxes. So even if so, this is one angle that a lot of the AI experts, I'll just call it AI experts. It might be generative AI, might be LLM experts. We'll just call them AI experts for this. AI experts will quite vigorously argue that LLMs don't reason, they don't think, and it's just theater. Sure, but maybe that theater is helpful for adoption and building trust. So there's that angle that does it think or it doesn't think? Does it matter if it helps people adopt these tools? That's one question to ask. But then the other part of it is that actually, even though technically you could say that LLMs don't reason, they simulate reasoning by, statistically predicting the next sequence of text or next word. But the problem is that thinking and reasoning are not like a single concept in psychology or in humans either. So when someone says, LLMs don't reason or think, the first question is like, what do you mean by reasoning or thinking? It depends. Like, are we talking about, are we talking about cognitive processes like heuristics? Are we, is it logically valid, or, are we focused on performance, or, does it require consciousness? These are different things. And so when someone says, oh, they don't reason, it's like, okay, but what do you mean by reasoning? It's not like a settled debate of what thinking and reasoning mean. It also depends on what discipline you ask. Are you asking philosophy? Are you asking psychology? Who do you ask? There are people who used to, until recently, we thought animals don't think or reason, but that's not true. That's not really true. It's just that our methods were not very good, and we had very anthropocentric ways of measuring that or thinking about that. So, it's that's yeah. If we have very narrow definitions, and then you might say that LLMs don't reason. But if you are talking about things like inference, like you're inferring things from something, if you think of that as reasoning, that's how humans think too. You could say that they reason. Or thinking, like if you say that thinking is conscious awareness, then they don't qualify. But if it means that you're sort of, you could do something that is functionally similar to thinking, even if it's not conscious. And I think, if that seems a bit far-fetched, we already use these types of terms quite pragmatically, that we'll say like thermostats, like it thinks it's too hot here, or that a dog knows they did wrong. We assign a lot of anthropomorphic things to animals, and even like inanimate objects. I was like, oh, a car's being really stubborn today. We do that all the time. That is what we do as humans. So in that sense, I don't know. Is it fair to say that? Oh, they don't reason because, like, well, the car also wasn't being difficult. The car broke down for, so the difference is functional equivalence or biological similarity. Like, planes don't fly like birds, but they do fly.
Yep.
That's a functional equivalent.
And so probably for a few philosophers and for a few engineers, the questions about whether machines think matters. For the likes of us, it probably matters more whether a model that assumes the machine thinks is the best model to get the best results. What models of us using these things are going to be the right models? They don't have to be the same things. Rather like, I don't know if you sail, but people kind of assume that sailing boats go forward because the wind blows them. Mostly it sucks them because it's the speed of the air going around there. But it's a perfectly good model for most people to understand.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that when people argue that they're just, they're just predictive prediction engines. Yes, but the thing is that unfortunately, human brain is also largely pattern recognition and statistical inference. There is a way of looking at the brain that is sort of predictive processing that we're constantly generating hypotheses of what's going to happen without really doing it. And when basically when the hypothesis does turns out to be wrong, we get frustrated or surprised. That is how we predicted that something will happen, and when it doesn't, we're surprised, annoyed, frustrated, whatever. Sensory input. We're looking to match that. If you put your hand on a hot stone, what you think is a hot stone is cold, you're surprised because you predicted it'll be hot, and all that kind of stuff. So the mechanism of predicting from previous patterns. That is how humans operate. We're not that much
We're not
more
so
special.
special, yes.
We're not so special, and it's like human thought is largely pattern recognition, context sense. So we're updating our assumptions, our priors, and so on, and statistical inference. Even though it's intuitive, it's not beyond like we don't do it consciously. Then it's kind of it's not too different in that sense, for the purposes of there's a difference in knowing how to drive a car than to fix the engine. I don't need to know how to fix my car's engine, but I do need to ha know how to drive it well. And it's a bit of the same thing that, I don't need to know exactly how the inside of the LLM works. I don't need to build it or train it. That's a whole other set. But I need to understand enough to drive it well, effectively.
Yeah, for many years I drove a manual car and I used the clutch. I don't really know what the clutch did, but it let me change gears. And something happened in the engine that made that possible. But all I needed to know was changing gears, clutch, and you've got to get the timing right.
I tell you what, there's a even more simple than that. I was quite old when I realized during a project that I actually don't know what the functional difference is between paracetamol and ibuprofen. And that was the first time I Googled it, and that was many decades into adult life that I actually looked up what it does. And I was like, oh, that's the mechanism. Yeah, I should probably look that up sooner. So, but
Yep.
there are a lot of things that we just kind of guess, or and also humans hallucinate in quotation marks all the time. Our memories are very fragile. We remember certain things that seem important, a bit like ChatGPT's memory just notes down very random things sometimes, and it forgets important things. That's what our memory is. It's no better than that. And we also, when we don't know the answer, we make up the answer. That's what we talk about with surveys and
Yeah.
like it's the same thing. It's like if you ask someone a question the wrong way, they probably don't know the answer, but they'll make up something that sounds convincing. It's exactly, it's not necessarily a lie. It's just like it sounded good, and it's like, well, now that you put, I'll just think of an answer to be polite. Humans do the same thing. And it's kind of it surprises me that more people haven't kind of, no one's said it out loud. I don't know, maybe they're thinking privately that talking to an LLM is a lot like interviewing, like same skills as interviewing or writing surveys, because you have to think about, can it answer this question? How do I need to ask to get the outcome that I'm looking for? And if but with LLMs, you can change the question. You can rewind, back to an earlier question. Go, ah, that went on a wrong track. Let's go back and I'll ask it differently. and then get on the right track. With humans, you can't. You're kind of like you've already gotten into a certain track. But I don't know where it's going with that, but it's definitely that's one aspect of it.
So, for anybody who doesn't follow Alina on LinkedIn, I would recommend it. You've been posting a lot of really interesting stuff in this zone. And one series of posts you did got a lot of interest, which was to do with the censorship and the guardrails in different things. You know, just highlight a couple of those for us.
So that was an accidental discovery. It was basically I just paid for the Google One thing, and I'm just experimenting with Gemini, and I'd asked a few things with Gemini, but it was basically asking anything that had to do with Donald Trump. It just like I now I can't remember what the exact questions were I started from. Oh no, I think I was asking about the actor who plays Donald Trump in the film, in the Apprentice film, and it just started. It was very curious that it would not mention Donald Trump's name at all. It would just would not. It would make up stuff and it pretended that it went to great lengths to rewrite history for that actor, not Donald Trump, but the actor who plays him in a film. It made up a whole bunch of stuff, and that was. It wasn't a deliberate experiment. It's just like it got a bit more bizarre as it went on, and I was like, "This is very weird." And it would not even list like names of U.S. presidents. It just categorically said, "I cannot talk about anything that has to do with politics." And I was like, "Okay, it's kind of we're talking facts now. It's not campaign trail. It was after the inauguration," and it wouldn't even like. I think maybe a little while ago. ChatGPT would say that your question violates our guidelines. Please ask something else. Gemini just shuts it down. It will not talk anymore. It won't say what you've violated. It's just like I'm not talking to you. That's it. Not talking to you. And it was, I think, it sparked a lot of conversation because there were some people who said, oh yeah, well it's just it's kind of a it's a bug that they're working out. I'm like, but Google is one of the If one of the biggest tech companies on the planet, they have so much money. How would they have a bug in a something that they are selling? It's rolled out to millions of people, and you're charging money for it quite a lot, and it has guardrails that you haven't thought about very well. But I think in this case, it's a good illustration of why you do need someone who understands human behavior in there because. That is a question, you need to think what might people ask? How do they ask it? When is it political? It's not political to ask who's the latest US president who's just been inaugurated. It's a fact. But after that, I can't trust Gemini at all because it's like, well, in this case, I know the answer.
Yes.
Next time, once you've made up something that obvious, I don't trust you at all because what will you make up next time when I don't know what the correct answer is?
And
So,
the timing was also very good because a lot of people had been using DeepSeek for a couple of weeks, spotting won't talk about Tiananmen
yes,
Square,
that's
things
true.
like this. Oh, look, the Chinese one is censored. And then, so what
Yes,
were the
actually,
others?
yeah, that's a good point. I totally forgot. It feels like a lifetime ago. I think January 20th feels like a lifetime ago. The inauguration feels like it feels so long ago. But yes, it was. I think I posted about that because I had seen so many people, mostly Americans, making a big deal about how DeepSeek won't talk about Tiananmen Square. Like, okay, sure, but Gemini will not talk about. A very uncontroversial fact that is bizarre. And that makes you think, what else are you censoring? If you're censoring that, plain facts, not even controversial. If you're going to censor who plays the US president in a film that was nominated and I think won some things at the Oscars, when you can't talk about that, then I have a lot of questions about what else are you censoring? And the fact that it comes from the US doesn't mean that it's trustworthy. That's a halo effect, or like a nationality halo effect.
Weird.
And I think that's what really like I would probably not have written about otherwise, but it was with the context of thanks for reminding me of the context of DeepSeek.
So let's change more and more into the human side of it. So what are the challenges of blending human behavior, which is your speciality, and LLMs, which is becoming your speciality?
It's like a flavor, I guess. I think the biggest challenge that I look at, there's probably plenty, but from my perspective, it's that people don't interact with LLMs like they would do with machines, or there's a mismatch or that mental model for a lot of people that is hard to get over. There's a recent Pew Research report that says. That says something like three quarters of AI experts think that it's super beneficial to their everyday lives and so on. And it's a, I can't remember the exact statistics, but it's the gap to the general public is huge because there is a mental, like I've seen this in a lot of friends and family who just don't see the, like, well, what would I use it for? It comes much more naturally to knowledge workers to even use it that way. I mean, obviously students and younger people are using them more, so that's a whole other demographic to think about. But I think the big difference is that we have different mental models, and that is where there's an interesting area that we don't know enough about. You don't interact with an LLM like you would with a machine. It's more like a person, but it's not a real person. So that discrepancy is, well, that kind of like that, not discrepancy, but that mismatch in how we perceive it intuitively versus what it is just, there's that. And it has a lot of consequences. Like when you're used people when they're using LLMs, you'll evaluate it based on not just if it's factually accurate, but is it coherent? What's the intent behind it? It's like the social cues that it's giving off. And all of those things influence the trust versus transparency element of like that tension for people that you don't necessarily trust the si we don't tend to trust systems we don't understand, but at the same time, if the LM gives an explanation of their outputs, it's not necessarily accurate, which is a lot of people say, like, they're not really thinking, but it makes it feel more understandable to people who are new to it. So it makes it feel more transparent and more trustworthy if you see how it's thinking. Is it real? That's another question. But there's that part. It's a bit like, if you show a you feel like the time is going faster if you see a blue circle or whatever, like a progress bar. It's a bit like that. And then there's there are other things like we expect things to be consistent and predictable. So if there's a you don't want it to be rigid. You don't want the LM to act in a rigid way because that's more like a pre-programmed chatbot. But if it's too flexible, then it becomes a bit unpredictable. And then it, veers back into that, trust area. So that's a very fine line to balance. And there's another aspect of like how much agency you give people and what is safe. And here there's an interesting parallel. I talk a lot about dogs as well because very curiously, there's often a par it helps me conceptualize things in a, there's an analogy. But basically, one big trend in trend or change in dog training is in recent years is that we are moving to there's a discourse where we should give more choice and agency to animals, and that's been happening for some years, but it's kind of becoming mainstream now. But the question is that some people are like, well, you can't give them too much choice because they can't make good decisions. Yes, absolutely. You don't, it's not you just like you don't give children all the choices because they're not adults yet. Similarly, dogs live in a human world, so you have to give them choices within safe boundaries. So here, I'm not saying humans are dogs. I'm just saying that there's a parallel in the conversation of like what is the right level of agency versus keeping the users safe. Same things like what's the right level of agency and choice that you can give to a dog within safe parameters, like where and that isn't a clear cut. So that's an interesting, it's an interesting one. And then there's, the last thing that I find quite a rich theme to think about, though not necessarily answers, is the whole, cultural fit, because the LLMs feel quite different. And I don't know if there's I haven't seen a lot of research in this yet, but I've studied French since I was nine. And when I first tried Mistral, it felt very much like it just felt very different from ChatGPT back then. ChatGPT talks a lot like a verbose American, like it just explains a lot, it talks a lot, and Mistral goes straight to the point. It's like logic, like mathematical logic. It doesn't, no extras, no niceties, no pleasantries. It gets the job done. Like I don't know. It's just it was very interesting, and I think the many of them are somewhere in between. But that was a moment when I realized that some of the like cultural norms and conversational norms are also imbued in the how the LLMs operate. And I think, maybe more so in the future, but there's, that's just my feeling about it, because I haven't read about it. I don't know if anyone's doing it consciously, but I can feel the difference of interacting with them.
So I'm going to be publishing shortly a study I'm doing with a Japanese, Nigerian, and Thai friend, and they did the same exercise in I did an exercise in English. They then did it in English and in Japanese, English and in Thai, English and in Yoruba, all three of which are high context languages, unlike
Yeah.
English. And we got different sorts of results. It was most verbose when asked the question in English. And so even the same, and these were all ChatGPT, even the same, when you ask it in different languages
Yeah.
natively, it has an implication, because what is the probability that this is the right answer when I'm asked it in Japanese is different to the probability that a Japanese person asking me it in English generates.
I mean, there are also other differences. Like, I'm a native Finnish speaker, but I've been speaking English most of my waking hours for, best part of 20 years now. So I think in English. I now find it difficult to switch to thinking in Finnish. I naturally think in English, but when I try to express myself in Finnish, I have to switch the way I'm thinking. I have to. It's very hard to describe, just describe, but it's, I have to change how I express myself, how I guess express certainty, like confidence in what I'm saying. Also politeness, like hedging, all types of things are different. And I mean, there's also, I think, you use you will start. You'll structure your thoughts differently in different languages. If you're not bilingual or multilingual, you have not experienced it. It's very hard to put into words, but anyone who has tried it will notice that. Like, the clearest example I could give is that I remember many years ago, I did a, out of curiosity, did a course in Chinese. And I remember there were, maybe there were like 10 people there. Everyone else was a non-native English speaker, like me, some were Spanish, German, whatnot. And there were two Americans. And they were the ones who found it hardest to understand that Chinese does not have Mandarin, does not have like temporal tenses. I'm probably using the wrong term now, but I went to the shop. I went to the shop. It says, today I go to shop. Yesterday I go to shop, and it's basically it's the same word, and they everyone else in a room who's had to learn another language were like, okay, weird, okay, but fine, moving on. And then the two native English speakers who had never learned another language found it incredibly difficult to even comprehend that there is a different way of structuring that the it's basically I go to shop is the same thing every time. You just swap yesterday, today, tomorrow I go to shop. That's the easiest. It's just a very salient example from 20 years ago or so. But there are many other much more nuanced things. Also, like agency, like some languages will say, "Oh, the vase fell on the floor," whereas that like, "Oh, just fell on it by itself." Like in Spanish, there are different tenses. So I think some of these things are they are built they are kind of like weaved in, but it's very hard to test them. And I think we're nowhere near knowing all this. It's so new that you have to kind of like, that feels like it's happening, but it takes so much effort to test any of it that you don't tend to do that. So therefore, it's invisible to you. And that's,
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're running into the time buffers. Lots of people are not as far down the path of using these tools as you, Alina. So what would your recommendations be for people to up the level of their involvement with LLMs?
I think I think the first, first is kind of a mindset shift of not thinking of it as prompting. At the beginning, I thought of like prompt engineering, and I thought the engineer part, but made it feel like it's not for me. I'm not an engineer. But actually, think of it more like briefing, a colleague or, a thinking partner, really. And it's not really about crafting the correct one. If that's the kind of thing you want to do, like getting a, one shot of, execute this marketing strategy for me, I don't find them very useful. Some people do. I find it more like an iterative thinking partner. I think the first one is to think of it as briefing, treat it as a thinking partner, experiment constantly. It is a skill that you build over time, but you have to. There, like, if you ask, like, what do you use it for? I don't know, but my life is different from your life. So you have to look at your own life, the types of things that you do, and just, experiment. Give various tasks to LLMs and see how it does. Like, I've used it to, I thought recently I took pictures of things in my pantry and got it to do an inventory. I would never bother doing that by myself, but that was really helpful. I ask it to, customize, like ready-made cake mixes to, make it more of this and that, like, things I don't like. And it's taught me, as a consequence, it's taught me a lot about baking and cooking. Super helpful. I would not have the patience to Google for all the recipes and stuff. Pfft, no, not a chance. But it's taught me very tailored ways of like how I operate, how I think. It now understands me, and it's super helpful. I can just ask it a lot of these things. But yeah, and you have to also have to experiment with different tools, what fits you. The more you use them, the more you develop your own way of interacting with them. And with some of them, like with ChatGPT, if you have the memory on, some people don't like that. I do, because it makes my life easier. But the more it remembers about you, the easier your life becomes, because it kind of starts to know a bit better how you operate, and you know how it operates. The other thing is that people are like, oh, but it's not always accurate. But humans aren't accurate either. That's the thing, is that you could ask someone and they don't know the answer. They're like, yeah, I think it's over there, or they misremember, or, get your question wrong. How many times that happen in a daily life? How often does it happen with a colleague that they give you the wrong answer because you asked the wrong question, they misinterpreted? It happens all the time. So don't assume that it's always right. It might have misunderstood you, or, just something happened. It happens to me. A bit more kind. I thought that's a bit of a weird word to use, I guess, but a bit kinder, that humans aren't perfect, and it's not perfect either. Is the goal isn't to get the correct answers, is to think better and ask better questions over time. And and it feels like a lot of effort at first, which is a real barrier, that you can't just people shoot in the world, just use it, and I'll be, immediately I'll get press of a button, I'll get a lot of useful stuff. Like, if I said, I use LLMs to write constantly. They're a really integrated part of my workflow. But does it write it by pressing a button? Absolutely not. Like, I will dictate ideas, like half-baked ideas or half-connected ideas, and then go back and forth. And it actually, for the first time, something thinks at the same speed as I do. I don't, it's kind of, it helps me think better, but it's certainly not like, if I said out loud that I use LLMs to write a lot, people are like, oh, so you don't write it yourself, you just press the button. Absolutely not. It still takes, it takes quite a long time to make sure that it's right for me, but it certainly helps and makes it better. It's not the faster, it's the better. And experiment with different ones to find what suits you. I think that's really what it is. It's a skill that is, however you feel about them, it is necessary. It is
Yes.
necessary, because it like I'm not an AI enthusiast, or a doomer or whatever. I'm just a pragmatist. Like, it's coming. It's a bit like, do you know the Snowpiercer, the TV series where the Earth has gone, all iced over, and you have to get on the, you either get on the Snowpiercer or take it on a train that goes, that basically the train is, it goes around constantly so it doesn't freeze. That's the only way to survive on planet Earth in the series. And either you're on the Snowpiercer or you're left on the platform, and that's kind of what it's like. I don't, however you feel about the ice age coming, it's coming, and you got to get on the train. And that's how I see LLMs, that either you get on board or you're going to get left behind, or you don't want to be in, you don't want to be in third class. You want to be, you'd rather be have a nice comfortable seat and at least have a ticket for the train. So that's how I see it. And at some time, at some points of my journey, I've been a bit reluctant, like but then I see this is the way that the world will go, whether you want it or not. That's kind of, that's how I see it, and it's there's no point. I think you're only if you are resisting it, the longer you resist it, the more behind you are, and the only one that you are harming is yourself, really. Which is, I don't know, that's just that's my opinion. I'm not, not judging, but that's how I see it for myself, really.
Brilliant. Alina, that's been fascinating, and I'm sure people are going to enjoy listening to it. Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you.